The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Good morning. It's such a delight to see you here, and it's such a delight to be here this morning. We will try to, much as we can, to start on time and finish on time. Lots of things to cover. The first thing I'd like to do is, I'm Len Staub. I'd like to put my contact information here, and the both the contact information of the email and the that's my cell phone, which is here. It's the real thing. So if you would like to contact me or chat sometime, I am very, very open to that. I'm retired right now, so I look forward to the opportunities just to have some conversations with people. It's very nice and really in the business. So anyway, these are real things. You won't get a secretary or anything like that. And feel free to contact with me with that. Also, I have a few books. The ones that I had written on mission-directed governance, and in the back corner is my wife Sharon, if you could wave or so, and she has a few of those books if you're interested in purchasing one, either right here, or if you would like to, at least if you're looking for sometimes for a whole board or whatever, she can probably order, put that on an order, and we'll send those to you as well. How many here are board members? Are most board members? Okay, and administrators? A few there. Okay, mostly board members, and I am very, very honored for both, but particularly for board members, because I understand really the difficulties that you are that you're facing, and with the school, and you're there for a period of time. How can I make an impact, and what can I do? And so, let me give you just this brief introduction of myself. And that is that I've been involved in Christian education, taught grades, one time or another, grades 6 through 12, mostly, well, I think in my career I taught 18 different subjects at different levels. And this is everything from philosophy, economics, Bible, history, world history, U.S. history, and all of those kinds of things like that. Got into the administration. Was a high school principal for 7 years in Washington, and then became a school head, and had gone to several different places as well. And let's see, Northern California, Indiana, Florida, Southern California, and so forth, trying to always stay ahead. And almost all of those, particularly as school head, were under a governance of a traditional model. And we'll talk about what that means a little bit. But where it's the board is very, very actively running the school. And finally, in about 1995, John Carver came out with this book, Boards That Make a Difference. And it really made a splash. I'm part of that. I was very, very grateful for that. And I was in Florida at that time, and we worked with the board through a number of issues and found that to be very helpful, but also found some gaps and some things missing with the Carver model. And I'll talk about those here in just a little bit. And so trying to put some of the best things of both of the traditional model and of a Carver model that would be more a Christian-centered model of governance, we gradually developed and applied and found it worked, and that is mission-directed governance. And so since my retirement, too, I've had the opportunity to do some consulting, working with individual schools, wrote the book, and so forth, and just really appreciate the difference that that can make. So I see one of the reasons, in fact, you're probably here, is because governance of schools is so important. And many of you hear her say, you know, there's something missing. We could be doing something better. Some of you here are, may be here because your accreditation agency told you you need to be here because your school is having some difficulties with governance. And that is a very, very common thing. So what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about the mission-directed governance, but to look at some of the differences here, too. Why does your school exist? Oh, I wish we had time to really have some conversations on these things, but recognize with the sessions we just won't be able to do that, and or with the side. But we know what we are here for is trying to shape and influence students. We want to influence students. That's why we exist. But the thing is, what kind of influence do we want to make? And the other question will be, how does that happen? How can we ensure, in fact, that we are influencing the student in the right way? So this is what we see with the public school vision of education. The progressive education assumes that since there is no truth, education must focus on giving the student the pragmatic knowledge and skills that he or she will need to survive and succeed as one of the fittest. All right, from a whole Dewey and so forth, let's be pragmatic. How do you want to be successful and self-fulfilled? And so we need education in order to survive. Obviously, Christian sense of education is different. It's a matter of we are here to make disciples. All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to obey, and obviously as the kind of thing that we heard this morning as well. The disciple, one of the things of the disciple is reconciling all things to Jesus Christ as Lord. So it's not that Jesus Christ is only my Savior, but it's then once I am saved, and I recognize and commit myself to Jesus as Savior, then I have to acknowledge Jesus is Lord. And so what does that mean for my life? It transforms my life, first of all, and it also commands me as a disciple to be involved in changing the world and bringing all things under the feet of Jesus Christ. So all this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation, that God was not reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting men's sins against them. And then from the 2 Corinthians, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. Dramatically different views of what is the purpose of education. but yet the same. The same between a progressive and a Christian view is trying to influence and inculcate a whole worldview into the students. But the thing is, again, what shall that vision be? And so we see, first of all, here then particularly the vision of classical education. And these are things, let's say, from the website there. All right, these were just some different things in different pockets on the website. Virtue, living for a higher purpose, lifelong learning teaches the students in the art of thinking well, making a difference in the world. Solid foundation, ability to reason and discern truth, present ideas persuasively, know what they believe and why, and positively impact the community. All right, so we have a vision in there someplace of what is discipleship about. What are we trying to do to influence the student? But that is our vision. And I make a distinction between a vision and a mission. Vision is this. Let's imagine how wonderful it would be if our students were able to do all of those things, know what they believe. They would be able to change the world. They would be solid for Jesus Christ. They would have a right worldview. Wouldn't it be great if we had that vision? Let's start a Christian school on a classical model that is going to produce that kind of student and that kind of a disciple. The imagination, the kind of thing over coffee at the kitchen table, and where we just have the conversation and it's so much fun to talk about that. But the mission is when we go from the casual conversation and we're excited about it and we see what we would like to the students to become, it's now different to say we have a commitment that, in fact, that's what we're going to do and that we are going to be organized for this. What we are doing, I put it this way, we want to do education on purpose. That's what this is about. We want education on purpose. And so we have to take it away from many of these casual conversations, exciting as they may be, and bring it down to what are we going to do about it, and how are we going to be most efficient and most focused on the student? So we take our vision and we make a mission and we form the mission statement. And I'm sure, you know, I would imagine every school has a mission statement someplace. But what I find is that the vast majority of mission statements are not a mission statement because it has a different focus. So often, mission statements are produced by the development office or by the promotions, or even where you'd hire somebody, say, give us a mission statement that's really going to make an impact. And the thing we find is that the purpose of the mission statement is for internal school changes that will guide all of the aspects of the school into the purpose to say, this is what we want to accomplish. The mission statement is for you, the school. It identifies the purpose and the target, from the mandate of make disciples, and we define what we want discipleship to be, it needs to give us the criteria by which we can align every part of the school to say, is this serving this purpose? And if it's not, then we may look at those areas to say, here's something when we have to talk about cuts, that's the thing to cut. Or we look at if whatever programs we may have or learning, is it contributing to the mission to produce that kind of a student that we're defining? So it drives student learning, provides measurement and evaluation, and it can provide the strategic plan, advancement, and planning. So the mission statement, again, is first of all internal. The secondary use is to serve as a promotional or a marketing piece or an information piece to the community. And again, that is probably one of the major things that I want to get across this morning, is reevaluate your mission statement of what does it do. Is there anybody within your whole school system who can look at the mission statement and use that as criteria, and particularly for board? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit here. To be able to hold the school head and your faculty and staff accountable for what they're doing and the programs that they have, are they in fact accomplishing this? Let me give you a sample of a Christian school thing. I'll just read it first here. You can read it as well. All right, the mission of our Christian school is to provide and promote a biblically based quality education that nurtures the student to grow in God-centered discipleship. So the school is there for student discipleship. Now we go, the next step is defining, even in the mission statement here, if I tripped over a disciple, that I'd say that's what we want to produce, what would be the characteristics of that student? And so in our mission statement here, we are already including some definition of what that discipleship means. Namely, that the disciple will be equipped with vision, understanding, discernment, the ability to live in community, and be of service in order to renew all relationships and culture to be under the authority of Jesus Christ. Note that what we're doing with the mission statement is focusing on the student. We want to be student-centered. The school exists for the student. Too often, and I'll use a little bit of a criticism here, I suppose, of Carver already at this point, is that the responsibility of the board is to make sure the school is okay, and that we have the finances, and that we have the school image, and the right buildings, and the right promotion to make the school last long. And so in order to make the school last long, we need the right students to come in. All right, so the priority is making the school good. And my suggestion here is we need to turn that around, and we are student-focused and student-centered, the discipleship-centered. All right, so now we'll move into governance. And what is governance? We better talk about that. All right. And this is our organizational framework. Defines the role of the board, school head, and the ownership group. And I know there's lots of varieties here. Some where, particularly maybe under the Carver model, the board is the ownership. or other ones. There's a parochial model where a school is owned by a church, or it could be owned by an association or a society, or some are even owned by an individual who started the thing in the first place. But we need to define then what are the roles of the board to the ownership, for example. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of that in my book about establishing a covenant so that there is a really great agreement on what is the school's purpose, and that the owner gives the authority to govern to the board. So you need to keep separate the owner out of, again, the daily business and second-guessing the board. And there are ways to do that. Governance clarifies, then, the roles and limits of their responsibility, the authority, participation in decision-making, and the accountability. Provides the reins for control and assigns who is empowered to determine the direction and operational practices. Determines the process of decision making, develops criteria to sort which issues the organization will consider, and determines whether the organization focuses on the mission. All right, so we're looking at the whole thing, the line, the authority of who can make what decision or in cooperation with others. And so we find typically three models, at least, that we'll talk about here: the traditional, the governance by policy, the Carver model, and then the mission-directed model. All right, any questions at this point? All right, we'll move on here then. And the traditional model, I don't know if you know what model you are under. If you are not sure, you're probably under the traditional model. And there are these characteristics. Most schools, Christian schools, including the classical, are traditional. As I understand, many of you perhaps have gone from the traditional to the Carver model because there are some reasons, and we'll talk about that. But under the traditional model, this is usually where you have board members are representatives of a homogeneous and closely tied community. You have kind of an inner core who began the school. You know each other personally, often related to each other, go to the same churches, maybe are involved in the same industry. I put the traditional a little bit like Little House on the Prairie. Remember, Paul used to do that, and they had a couple of things where Paul was on the board, and they would do that, and they would decide, well, what textbook should we get, and who should sweep the floors this time, and who's going to stoke the stove in the winter and buy the coal and all that sort of thing. The distinctive here is that word, they're representatives. And so we kind of have that thing of, I represent the people out there, and this is what they tell me that we need to do. And we'll see, that's one of the things, for example, that the Carver model corrects, I'll say. The second thing here is that it operates informally. By assumption, precedent, tradition, personality, get together, let's say however many board members, 7, 12, I've seen it into the 20s, and they all have a discussion on whatever the issues are going to be. But never sure of exactly where this is going or why or how the topic necessarily even came up. The mission under the traditional is a promotional theme at best. I find many of the traditional, in fact, do not have a mission statement, or that is being corrected because they feel culturally, they need to come up with one. But again, not where that's going to influence, again, the direction and the organization of the school. It has more to do with, again, the promotional aspect. Some operational characteristics. The board agenda and the organizational direction priority issues is determined typically by independent board standing committees. The traditional model typically has, all right, a finance committee, a transportation committee, a facilities committee, education committee, and I don't know what, 80 different standing committees. And what happens there is that the committees are independent. They meet on a different Tuesday night. And they, at the beginning of a season in August or September, say, well, what do you think we should talk about this year? Oh, well, I think we ought to start a new reading program or whatever. Let's talk about student discipline. We need to repaint whatever it is, and so they do that. They then meet for three or four times and then submit a report to the board. The board gathers together, and there are still schools that do this too. They literally read out loud the report, which takes a long time, as if the board members can't read, or, well, maybe they haven't read it beforehand. But anyway, that's by and large what the whole board meeting is about, is listening to the committee reports who say, this is what we've been doing. Now, they may, at an occasion, have an actual recommendation and say, this is what we want to do. We propose that we're going to adopt a new reading series for the elementary school. And they would give that to the board, and the board would say, well, okay, we either give up a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And so they would either deny or approve, and about 98% of the time, the board must approve whatever the committee proposes, because the committee is the one that did all the work and made the decision. And their thing would be, is otherwise, why do you have a committee? You've heard these kind of things. So in a sense, the board, my point here with this, the board is under a traditional model, cannot, by virtue of organization, cannot give leadership to the school. The agenda, the topics come from the standing committee. The board politically cannot, or only under the most dire circumstances, would tell a committee, we do not approve your recommendation. After all the committee reports, some traditional boards then would have what I label here as roundtable, where they can go and each board member says, the president would go to the each board member of, do you have anything you want to bring up? And so somebody, a board member, well, yeah, there was a big fight on the playground this morning, and really didn't like the way the second grade teacher handled that. Oh, okay, well, let's talk about that as a board for an hour where nobody really knows what took place. Thing. But anyway, any board member is allowed to raise any issue, and it is a pooling, by and large, of ignorance, because they're doing it without the facts and without having talked to anybody, but yet their thing would be is, okay, we have to take some action and we have to instruct somebody here to do something. So the board and the committees typically are involved in the day-to-day operations. They make administrative decisions, that is, those how to carry out the directions. And so what I see here with the role of the school head is minimized. The school head is then instructed to carry out, let's say in the thing of buying a new textbook series, the school head is instructed, you be the one to actually go out and purchase the books. That's their role. Really, the school head is rarely able to give leadership. The passion and the reason your school head got into the business in the first place is because they were really excited about discipleship and influencing students. And the organizational structure of the traditional model does not permit that. Instead, the ones who are controlling and leading are the dentist, all right, the farmer, the manufacturer, and those, and they're the ones who are making all of the educational and organizational decisions. Now, the traditional model, how many here have gone from the traditional to the Carver model? Okay, so then I'm assuming most of you are under the traditional. Okay, because I thought we had more, I was expecting more who were under the Carver model, but that's okay. Because what's happened with the traditional model, it is pretty much impossible to do any strategic thinking. The only thing that can happen at a committee level or a board level is, what was the problem? Problem solving is what it's all about. The idea is, we have such a marvelous school. We have a great school head. We have wonderful teachers. Our kids love them. If only we could solve these half a dozen problems this year, we will be perfect. But lo and behold, the next year, some other problem has raised their head. So the whole direction of the traditional style is always kind of looking backward to see what happened negatively, whose fault is it, and what are we going to do to try to patch it and correct it. And that is why, too, you get very much involved in the politics and who is a relative to whom and who is a neighbor and who did I talk to. And you've got the board member of, I don't know why, but I have all these people talking to me. I don't know why they come to me. But anyway, I have to relate to these people. They don't like that teacher because that teacher likes boys more than she likes girls. And so we need to talk about this at the board level. All right, so I put my question over here this way, though, for those of you who maybe went to the Carver model, of why did your school change from the traditional? What was the, why did the writings of John Carver make such a splash, and why so many schools said we do need to change from the traditional model? And this is, I think, some of the things. The traditional model, it lacks then the unified direction and priority. Again, a mission is a theme for public, not where it's a practical use for the board and administrator and faculty. Very political, personality-driven decisions, also impulsive and inconsistent. There is very undefined whose role is what between the board, the school head, who's accountable. See, I'll use this even with the traditional. no accountability. Let's say the thing is, in the your school, you have discovered no fourth grader knows how to read. Whose head would roll? You have an education committee. Can't be the chair of the education committee. That's a board member, right? Then you have the administrator. He's just a gopher, and at best an advisor. Maybe you have a couple of teachers on there, and you have a couple of parents, and they're thinking, well, we don't really know what we're talking about anyway. My point is, with the traditional, there is no accountability. And that's why things, too, there is so difficult to get things done. Again, the board does not lead, very difficult to advance, lacks the unified, purposeful leadership, and lacks a predictable criteria-based or purposeful accountability. So what are the improvements of the Carver model? Again, about 1995, came up with his book, Boards That Make a Difference. And what he says, what he did, is he said, instead of the traditional model where it's everybody just randomly talking about some topic, let's use a business model. We will be efficient. And so we look at the board, our trustees, rather than representatives. In other words, what that means is, instead of the board member saying, I represent the people, whatever they say, I just want to keep my ear to the ground and have all people tell me what they see to be their problems, and then my job as a board member is to go to the board meeting and get those things fixed. By trustee, we mean that the board member says, my responsibility is for the school as a whole, whether the constituency out there like it or not. I don't want to be involved in all of that politics out there and the phone calls and that sort of thing. I am responsible as a board member with other board members to be trustees and to may ensure that the whole school is moving in the right direction. And so one of the things they say is we need policies designed to keep the board out of the day-to-day administrative operations. And so we would actually get a board policy handbook. Second thing here, about the Carver model, and that's again to help the board distance itself from constituent politics and the local pressures. Again, let's say I like this teacher, I didn't like the last band concert, or there's this book in the library that we shouldn't have. Their thing is, okay, we give that to our school head, the administrator, who will take care of all of those things. So what the board does then is comes up with a series of policies, giving some general direction to the school, and then giving the empowerment to actually operate to the school head. So the school head is the CEO. So there are not the board standing committees. Carver, I believe, has maybe two committees. Nominations committee and executive committee, I believe. Because one of the things I added with mission is I really believe you have to have a finance committee, not to make decisions for the financial things, because that's already been done. We'll talk about that. But as an administrator and school head, I want to make sure the board knows what's happening financially and that I am accountable, and I want all of that information to be out there to the board. That's nothing else for my protection as a school head. All right, so the Carver model corrected a couple of those things. And then by leading by policies, it becomes an actual book of policy 100s, 200s, 300s, and so forth by topic, not what so many boards, particularly under the traditional thing, is do you have policies? And what they mean by that is do you have precedent? And so if an issue comes up, a board member said, well, you know, in 1992, I think we had a similar situation with that, with a teacher like that. And this is, I kind of remember, this is what we did at that time. All right, that is not a policy. The policy will be an actual written statement defining this is what is to be done under those particular circumstances. It can be a policy that gives a direction or a goal there, or it gives a direction on a process or how to, and so forth. And so consequently, that guides the school head into what we should be doing under those circumstances so that the board does not need to be involved with that. So the board leads by policies, and here, and then the business standards are used to measure success and progress. The Carver model is by and large consumer driven, and it's what do our customers want? So you need to adjust and adopt your school to find out what the customer wants and make the thing. So focus primarily, the board then focuses primarily on finance and image questions. Love to go through all of those financial sheets and all that sort of thing. I hate to tell you, I just couldn't stand that. But so much was there because I just had such tremendous bookkeepers and so forth. They knew what we were and all the information was out there. They felt as a board under the business model, that's the kind of thing that you have to follow. So we'll look at what are the frustrations with the Carver model. And this is what I found, again, in my experience, where we started work with the board and we started moving in this direction. And again, with a lot of improvements, I just really appreciate much of what Carver has done. The problem was what's lacking. And it really lacks a Christian perspective, a faith-based, any Jewish, Muslim, whatever it may be, it's not coming from a particular faith. It's a matter of, again, a business direction. It omits a philosophy as the unifying force and direction of why the school exists, really that discipleship, and what is a disciple supposed to be of Jesus Christ. It fails to define a faith position, the implications, and again, the mission is a theme for the promotion of customers. That's one of the things that I found when I talk with people under the Carver model. These are what I hear from them. The second thing is that it distances itself from the local support and accountability. Again, the traditional model had so much politics, listening to the constituency, the telephone calls, and all that sort of thing. One of the things was, let's separate ourselves so the board becomes autonomous. And by that, we mean the board determines who, in fact, will be future board members. We do not go to the constituency and ask, what's your opinion, or vote. The problem with that is the organizational drift. By that I mean, you know, the Harvard, the Princeton, and that sort of thing, and we ask the question on how in the world did these universities that started out as seminaries and producing teachers for Jesus Christ and required Bible and all that sort of thing, required chapel and whatnot, how did they go to a place where it's so difficult to be a Christian? And I mentioned a little bit there's a book written by a guy by the name of George Marsden, who talks about the soul of the university. And he goes through, it's about that thick, and he talks about universities, not only the Ivy League, but from all over the country, on what's happened. My interpretation is it's governance. One of the guys I really, really would love to say is a marvelous guy that I respect, and I'm just so disappointed in, is Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson for Princeton is the guy who dramatically changed Princeton from being a Christian university to where he hired a couple of people who were not professors who were not Christian. But he wanted to hire this math guy, for example, because it would be so great for the prestige of the school. And the thing was, this was Woodrow Wilson's call. And so he did, and he began to hire those kinds of things instead of looking at what are the criteria we want for a professor, namely their Christian and their worldview and all those kind of things like that, that they have to be a believer, just kind of forgot that and was again looking at how are we going to maintain our university and give it prestige. And so we want the prestigious professor, even if they're not. After all, it's only math, right? So they don't deal with theology and philosophy and relationships and all that sort of thing. All right, but anyway, I see this as a danger and a risk with the Carver model also, is there is no tie, there's no accountability of the board to its constituency. It's not designed, Carver model, for the characteristics of the organization. Again, it's not designed for education. It's designed, I think, greatly for some nonprofits that would be national. I think it would work wonderful for the American Red Cross or something, but we're missing some things. And finally, lacks the sufficient policies to guide the CEO, your school head, and what the expectations are, and they expect all of these things just to kind of happen, and there is no really direction or accountability that's going to be taking place from the board to over the administrator. It's not designed for board leadership. The complaint I've heard again and again from those who are involved in the Carver model is we meet and we have nothing to do. We go over the finance thing and, yep, okay, and we have this question and we'll tweak that and that sort of thing. But really, we don't do anything. And we're kind of frustrated with that. And finally then here, very limited criteria for the school head evaluation. And because of the evaluation of Carver model is, if the school's doing okay, the school head's doing okay. And so there's no real criteria, again, really about the advancing. All right, and I've got about a minute here yet to go to the mission directed, just to the introduction. So what I've tried to do is, how can we have a board that is unified? The thing we need for a unified board is that there is a mission that unifies the school. There is a purpose to saying this is what we're accomplishing. We need to clarify roles. And again, the Carver model does this well and use some good things with there. We get rid of the standing committees. Now, I'm a firm believer in committees, not board standing committees. The school head should be typically the one who is the leader of an ad hoc committee. And that there will be again, unity and vision and accountability. That is what we are after. All right, now we are going to take a break. I believe we're at 10 o'clock, and we're going to be gone for take a break for about 10 minutes. And now I want to get into more in depth, particularly what's happening with the mission-directed governance. Yes. The question here was, how do we go about making sure that our philosophy and our mission, in fact, is going to be not compromised, and that it's going to be there for the long term? That's what we'll cover. All right, great. Thank you.